Tonight I want to talk about what can be a very pleasant topic, and that is the perfections. About 6 years ago, I started on a series of Dharma talks on the paramitas, a list of 10 qualities that we can all cultivate in order to move forward in our lives toward lasting happiness. And I got about 2 or 3 talks into this series when Pauletta started teaching on the same subject. And she was recording her talks, and I hadn't yet been doing that with mine. So I withdrew from the effort and left it to Pauletta, who produced a fine resource for the Sangha, which you can find on our website on the left column of our homepage under teachers. She is using the word that usually refers to the Mahayana list of 6 paramis. And we've just started to look at the potential confusion that applies to this topic of the lists of paramis or paramitas. The English term perfections can refer to either of those 2 lists. And the term parami or paramita, they're roughly synonymous. And they have a double meaning. They can help us pass over to the further shore, and they are also foremost in importance in terms of guiding our lives. This latter meaning of being foremost is why they're so often called the perfections. We can make them foremost in our lives. That is what we can do with them, by the way, with the word perfection. Perfect them, cultivate them, let them grow within us. Another reason why I haven't ventured into this list of teachings is that it's pretty nebulous. The traits that we can cultivate aren't nebulous. They're indeed extremely helpful in our practice and just getting through daily life. And I highly recommend them. But they have many iffy attributes as a list, not least of which is their historical origin. I can't even begin to list them for you without first making a delicate choice between 2 sides of a deep split in Buddhism. Just as I was writing this, at this point, I went to double-check my memory about the history of this split and found that it's hard to get a straightforward answer on the web. It depends on who's writing the answer, showing that people on many sides of this still have strong feelings about it. And this is 21 centuries or so after the Buddhist path diverged between the Mahayana and the Theravada, about 400 years after the Buddha's death. Even the names of these 2 sides are laden with feelings. The Mahayana was the new branch, and its name means greater vehicle. It's devoted to carrying all beings across samsara to nirvana. Its adherents called the old branch the Hinayana, or lesser vehicle, saying that its adherents were only concerned with their own enlightenment. So it's easy to see why this tradition prefers to call itself the Theravada, the way of the elders. In the early suttas that were written down a couple centuries after the Buddha's death, in the scholarly language of the time, which was Pali, there nowhere appears any list of perfections. Individual ones appear throughout the Buddha's teachings, but he just didn't put any lists together. As the Mahayana movement grew over these centuries, Theravadins began to gather up these traits to emphasize the ideal of what came to be called bodhicitta, or compassionately seeking liberation from the attachment to self in order to free all beings from suffering. This is the idea of the bodhisattva, an enlightened person who vows, or a person destined for enlightenment who vows to forego nirvana in order to keep being reborn until all beings are enlightened. And having started out in Zen, I took that vow on my first day, and I remember it vividly. Afterwards, I sort of sat back or leaned back and thought, But I still stick with it. Theravada scholars will point out that these ideas do appear in the early suttas, but the Mahayana made them its centerpiece to the point of disavowing the Pali canon altogether. The six paramis are considered one of the essential Mahayana practices. The Theravadins had assembled a list of 10. The Mahayana dropped 5 of them and added a new one. So, as you see, I couldn't even decide which perfections to teach without wading through some occasionally acrimonious history. At least these two camps didn't go to war repeatedly and burn each other at the stake the way the Protestants and Catholics did. And I have to tell you that yesterday at that memorial, I sat next to a Tibetan Lama who gave the blessing for the wife of my Theravadin teacher. And there were several people who were there yesterday who follow practices from all three of the major traditions, Theravada, Mahayana, and Tibetan, or Vajrayana. Here in the Bay Area, we do tend to usually live in peaceful harmony. So, what are we supposed to do with the perfections, aside from perfecting them? And as I said in my email, there's no way I can walk you through the entirety of the teachings about each one in this brief Dharma talk. But, you know, the goal is simple. It's to become a better person, one who functions better while on this planet and making the world a little better instead of worse, day by day. If you want to quibble about whether you're doing this in order to get to nirvana and never set foot on planet Earth again, or help others cross over, or become fully enlightened as a Buddha and teach, or not, well, you're welcome to it. But You can also just take one step ahead of the other, bearing in mind that your nature includes these characteristics that can always be more fully tuned and expanded. But you've got them. It's very popular for teachers to talk about how these traits build on each other. I find this idea more appealing with the paramis, the shorter list, but it's never been so appealing that I've intentionally practiced them that way. Here's what I do like about the perfections. And let me rephrase that. Here's what I love about them. They feel good. Experiencing these inner capacities opens the heart and fills it with tranquility and gladness. And what I'd really like to do in this little time that I have is give you a flavor of it. And so it'll be like a guided meditation. I'll name each of the paramis, and then after that, give you the rest of the paramitas. So you'll get a list of 11. Don't try to keep track. After briefly describing each one of these, I'll pause so you can cast your memory back to when you had this experience, this feeling, and roll it around in your mind like you're letting your mind's tongue explore and fully taste the goodness of it. These are the mind states to which we can turn to get out of harmful emotions or moods or attitudes. The perfections can rescue us from our dukkha. So I suggest that you settle in for a guided meditation. You won't need to concentrate at all on what I'm saying. Just let it pass through your mind. Find a supportive posture. Take a breath. And then watch your body keep breathing. Generosity. A willingness that comes from within you to share your time and resources for the benefit of others. Seeing a need of some beings that you can meet and gladly providing what is needed. You do this all the time, and each time it feels good. Just smiling or holding a hand or giving money to something that will benefit the world. Let yourself savor the feeling of having been generous. Virtue or ethics. Taking care with how you speak and act to avoid causing other beings to suffer. Finding a way to say what's needed with kind words. Or moving carefully through delicate situations to avoid hurting people or the rest of the planet. It leaves a clean, buoyant feeling to have acted blamelessly, however big or minor the incident. Remember that feeling and enjoy the memory. Patience, the willingness to live with how things are now. Letting go of impatience with traffic, annoying conversations, tedious situations. Finding calm and poise as you put aside your desire for anything else to be happening. Finding a harmony with what is that lets you move ahead with ease. Each time you found patience, it's such a relief. And the art of finding it grows stronger within you. Savor the memory of times when you felt that ease. Energy, the ability to carry out what you decide to do. Focusing your attention on the tasks required to meet your goal, and giving yourself to each task in turn. When you have this energy, there's a flow you can feel from your intention to how you manifest it. Sometimes you have to summon this energy, but when you have it, you're happy in your work. Remember that feeling and enjoy it now. Concentration, whether it's building a child's toy or entering concentrated states of bliss, a natural channeling of attention is delightful. You do this all the time to learn things, to immerse yourself in what's important to you. Recall when you've done it and it made you feel good. Spend time in that feeling. Wisdom, discerning between helpful and harmful forces in life, and between skillful and unskillful ways to deal with them. Often wisdom seems like intuitively knowing what to do. Sometimes it's just knowing you need to pause and ponder what's going on and how to handle it. There's a calm satisfaction that accompanies the exercise of wisdom, a pleasant sense of balance. Let your mind applaud yourself and relish that feeling. Now to continue with the qualities on the longer Theravada list. Renunciation, letting go. From the moment you resolve to stop clinging to something, to the time you realize you have stopped. The process of dropping ways you habitually cause yourself distress, and the resulting sense of lightness and freedom. Letting go is a way we reward ourselves for caring about our own happiness. Recall when you have given yourself this release from suffering and rejoice in the gift. Truthfulness. There are times when you may not know all the facts, but you're intent on avoiding a lie. That intention is the heart of all ethics. A solid commitment to honesty lets you talk with assurance and respect for yourself and your listeners. It's protection against casual falsehoods and broken commitments. Truthfulness, like ethics, gives you a clean sense of ease and confidence. Recognize when you've stayed loyal to the truth rather than telling an easy lie, and enjoy how it felt. Determination. The mental commitment to finish what you start. The Buddha's decision to stay sitting under that Bodhi tree until he was completely enlightened. Your willingness to accept a challenge and see it through. You exercise this willingness each time you meditate for the time you decided you would, no matter what you experience while you sit. That's what makes a sitting successful. That's what keeps you meditating again. Appreciate yourself for having all this determination over the time you've been practicing. Loving kindness, or metta. Letting your life be guided by kindness toward all beings, which includes yourself. An enduring concern for the well-being of all, and an open heart through which love flows continuously. It's a feeling of gladness and tenderness for the awareness of life, which connects you directly with all that is. Let yourself savor and celebrate it. And finally, equanimity. A total acceptance of the truth of what is. A mental space unperturbed by clinging. Calm in a crisis, or alertness in boring times. Open-eyed acknowledgement of the current set of facts, which lets you clearly consider the best action to take. A time of balance and ease when wisdom can thrive. Remember when you've experienced equanimity and enjoy how it felt. Welcome back. So that is not any of the traditional ways to practice with the perfections. The Paramis practice series on our website, which Pauletta left for us, offers several of those. And again, I highly recommend them. This was more of the way I practice with the perfections. Usually in situations when I really need one or more of them. I'm sometimes upset from multiple causes, and I'll just summon up any positive feeling I can. That's what the perfections are. They're shelters from the storms of life. And metta is kind of everybody's favorite go-to for when you're a little mishugana. But I have lots of opportunities to summon up patience. The major cause of dukkha in my life is impatience. It's that pinched and restless feeling in the body that, like, you're pushing against this trap that you're in that's making you so impatient. And when I'm in it, if I can just say, this is how things are now, I get a blast of patience and equanimity, and it's like instant reprieve from torment. And I'm not saying that a few minutes later the traffic won't be driving me nuts again. But, you know, these perfections are things that we can always come back to. These are the alternatives to the muddles that our minds get us into. Great substitutes for suffering. The thing about the traffic, I just want to say that if I can remember that this is how it is now, suddenly the traffic isn't my problem. It's just what is. And all of these people around me are no longer the enemies. They're my fellow sufferers. And that gives me metta too. So I will keep teaching the perfections, but not as a list. This guided meditation will obviously be on the website. And I hope in a reasonable length of time to get the text of it on the website as well. What I will teach going forward, like the Buddha did, is just the perfection that is appropriate for the topic. So if you don't hear me talking about it, look for it. It's one of the things that we can do most helpful in practicing with the perfections, is to think about them. Remember that they're there. And it's something we can do right in the moment, no matter what's going on. Thank you.